quite a lot.
Podcast number 10. Introducing D into the family. We got Jay back in the house.
Yeah.
And Bo and I.
Yeah.
I keep introducing you as Bo and I, but it's actually Bo and you.
No, see, and see if they can work out how to spell that one.
It's funny, when we kicked off last time with Fran, we had this in the background and everyone was just like, proper like, sick way to jump into a podcast. It sets the mood for the rest of the day.
Remember?
Yeah, we spent a good
hour,
20 minutes, me, Fran and Jay, had a pretty awesome conversation and had jokes. And at the end, failed to record. So that's why there has been a gap since the last podcast was released. Now up to 940 hits. You know, one of my mini goals was to get to 1,000. Almost there. Yeah, man.
3 weeks.
So I sat here, a glass of wine, there's a beer, there's juice on the table. So just as I kicked off the last one, you know, the aim to spread a bit of good news, you know, be the positive bit of information that you get in your week. I think it's healthy to balance the information that you get.
That's true.
And I've been taking note of a couple of things that have pretty much blown my mind over the past couple of days. And one of them was from another podcast that I listened to, Brian Callen. He's a stand-up comedian. He's also been in Hangover, a couple of other films like that. But he interviews an old friend of his, the magician David Blaine. And anyone who's like watched TV in the last 10 years know that David Blaine is, you know, the biggest thing really there is in as far as magic goes. And I'm actually a big fan of magic myself. And Boan is as well. You'll often find us at parties doing the old classics. Yeah, and that became a bit of your chirping technique, isn't it? You know, you go to go the Vietnamese David Blaine, we called him, or the Vietnamese Paul Daniels. But in that interview, he said he was talking about a research they did on 200 students. So they split them up, and then they told half of the students that during that year, there would be a spike in their performance and a spike in the work that they were doing. And it happened to that half of the class. I mean, to that half. Then they did another experiment, again, 200 students. And then 100 students were told, they told that they were going to do very well and that they were doing very good work. And so half of them were given 10 minutes less than the other half. So throughout the week, so every day 10 minutes less, so it totaled about 14 minutes in total less that they were getting. But even though they were getting taught less time, they were told by their teacher that their brain was a muscle and it could grow. And if you trained it and if you worked on it, that it would improve. And just that knowledge alone allowed them to perform much better than the other class, that even though they had more time to study their work, they were less inspired and, you know, their brain was less receptive to that energy. And I think there's an important lesson to learn there, that, you know, once you open your mind to the possibility of something happening, you almost bring it into existence and you make it a possibility. But the minute you shut it off and you say, oh, nah, I could never do that, or it's like, I could never read a big book. You know, I used to think to myself that I could never read a big book. Then one day I said, why can't I read a big book? Because I like reading, like, you know, the smaller, easier to read novels. And then picked it up and I read through it. You know, The Lord of the Rings, and that's a massive one.
Yeah.
You know, and to get through that, that's like, and you feel a satisfaction at the end of it. But if you say to yourself you can do it, your brain starts preparing you for it, and I don't know, what do you think about that?
Well, that stuff about the brain as a muscle, and I think it's called neuroplasticity, and they did a study with London cab drivers, don't know if you know about this one. And the part of the brain associated with space, spatial awareness, topology, increased in size. It's amazing how exactly that.
Say that again.
So the part of the brain that is associated with spatial awareness, topology, you know, just I suppose navigation. I don't know how spatial awareness. I suppose is the best way to put it.
Okay.
That part, however they measure that part that the scientists believe is responsible for spatial awareness increased in size. So they did cab drivers in one group, mm-hmm. and general, you know, members of the public in another group,
yeah.
and they found, and that was like a famous study, London cab drivers actually, and they found that they're part of their brain that was responsible for moving, navigation, spatial awareness, was bigger than your average person.
Mm.
So how your brain can actually adapt and change, they thought, because before they thought that actually, no, after a certain age, fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no change.
Same level.
No. Same level, but now they realise, no, it can actually change. So what we were saying about...
But that doesn't defy... Remember once you told me a while ago when I asked you about evolution? Because I used to thought that the process of evolution was... If there's two different... goats, for example, and it's one goes to a hot country, one goes to a cold country. The one that goes to a hot country may need less fur, and depending on the food that they need to eat, they'll adapt some way. But what I thought is they would actually change and morph into that in order to suit the environment. But what you said, no. The ones that are a bit more hairy than the rest of them, they die off first. So in fact, all that's left is a less hairy race. And that's how actually evolution is done. Like the weak ones die off, but those that are left, more of those ones. So the ones that keep expanding,
yeah.
it's more of their characteristics and their genes
that's
that go
right.
on.
Yeah. So those, yeah.
But those cab drivers, if what I'm understanding from you is what you're saying, is there's actually a physical
transformation,
metamorphosis,
yeah.
or like a
your brain changes.
So isn't that? But doesn't that defy that whole theory? Because what you're now saying is
they've changed. Well, the brain has changed over time.
But that's a physical change, right?
Physical change. But I suppose in the sense that if you go to the gym, your muscles physically changed. Whereas evolution, we're talking about survival. So in a short period of time, those who are able to survive to their, you know, adapt to their environment, not in the sense that they change, but those with the characteristics that are able to better survive will survive. Those who can't die off, and therefore the genes will, of the ones that have survived, will just pass on. It's natural selection, that's how it works. Just rather than, I don't think it's rather than them actually evolving.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So you just say just because that part of the brain is growing for him, his child won't necessarily have that.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So exactly. So they're not evolving to survive over such a short period of time. It's just over, you know, many, many years. And so, yes, it's just the giraffes.
So what you're saying, it's just physical proof that if you do focus your mind on one particular thing, then it will get stronger at that particular thing. And you can actually see it if you're under a microscope or under a, you know, whatever, brain scanner, MRI scan, you will actually physically see a significant change in the area that you're strengthening.
Which they didn't know, they didn't realise that. So that was something that they discovered.
Mm.
And it was first done, and that's a worldwide discovery, but it was done London cab drivers. Mm. Coincidence, it's our city, but actually that was significant.
Well, it's that memory in it. It's basically memories.
Mm.
And they're memorising it.
That's right, yeah. But we, I mean, obviously muscles and...
It's like muscle memory, isn't it?
Yeah,
the more you do it, just memorizes it.
But we know that on the physical, but
it's mind. I would say it's like a field, you know, like the more you tread on the same path, the clearer it gets every time you do it. So when you're a cabman and you're getting called by the same people and it's going to the same areas, it gets clearer and clearer every time.
Clearer and clearer, but imagine that's measurable.
And then, you know, that same path, you start realizing other different things on that path.
Mm.
It's the same as cabman. Oh, that turn takes me there. It's like, that little patch there is different, or these flowers, you know, it's the same kind of, is it
the same? Yeah, and one thing I've noticed about being a driver now, I've been driving for a year, I realise I get lost quite quickly without TomTom, you know, when I'm going somewhere. But the minute I think, well, hold on, if I'm here and I kind of need to go in that direction, then you kind of figure it out yourself, you know, as long as I'm trying to get in roughly in that direction, northwest, so I'm going to be heading kind of that direction. Then you're kind of, you're using that part of the brain now, you're kind of that awareness, what you're talking about, which you you don't bother strengthening when you're just following a tom-tom, because that you're just following it blindly, like turn left, turn right. You're not thinking at all about that. You're just going ahead.
Focus on it. Yeah, you just exactly.
It's true. It's happened to me before, man. Remember, like the route I take to your house all the time. That's packed up motorway. So one day I decided to go. Let me go this way instead, and then it brought me to a better route eventually.
Yeah, I've been actively doing that now. Like on my way home, I deliberately take different routes and just see where it end, where I end up. And I found a really, really good shortcut the other day from work, and I'm like, why didn't I do this so much earlier?
Mm.
It cuts out so much traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
You avoid the main road.
Sadiq and Jay, you two have been buddies for years now, haven't it? From back in the day.
Right.
And I remember Jay always providing me these CDs, and I like, with amazing beats, and I remember that was before you actually put any lyrics on it, but I remember there was some crazy beats, and I mean I don't know everything about music, and I don't claim to be, you know, that much of a connoisseur, but I do enjoy it. And that music that you were producing was I remember Young Hero. There was a tune that you don't have it though. I remember you lost that,
didn't it? I've got that somewhere on the CD.
Tune entitled Young Hero.
Mm.
Do you remember it? It was me, you, and Ant, the trumpets. There was a prop. Remember, we went to studios and stuff.
Ages ago,
yeah. Yeah, the big heavy.
That was my favorite, man. That was a sick one, and that got me through my when I was living in China, when I was first in Huho.
Mm.
I had that, and I remember that was the first time I even bothered tried to write lyrics for us. To write rap lyrics.
Yeah,
I'd never tried it before.
I remember Jay telling me that he was planning to send you a CD as well. I was thinking, do you want some tunes? And he was like, yeah, man. He's in China, he's writing up some stuff. And I was like, you know, send them, man. You know what I mean?
Because if you think of it, I mean, writing lyrics is like modern day poetry.
Mm.
That's what it is. Because there are many ways to define what poetry is. Does it rhyme, or does it follow a certain rhythmic pattern or something? And rap combines all of those things.
At the time in China though, when you was there, was there things that you was going through that weren't like the best situation or whatever, like, because
madness. I went through my first abortion. First got my girl pregnant when we broke up as well. And, you know, she was the girl that I thought was going to be. We went to China together, Vietnamese girl. And then when we were out there, that was the first time I realized how it could be with girls.
Yeah,
the girls were loving me, and I just felt so powerful. I just thought I couldn't be with one. So I was honest with her. I said, I don't think we could be together. So she tried to commit suicide. Oh, she took all my money. She cut all my clothes. And
proper madness.
I was about half an hour away from like having to deal with a dead body.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, the point I'm getting to though is the fact that obviously with like you requesting some tunes just to write to and express yourself to, it's like a therapy sort of thing as well. Need that, you know. It's a way of like letting out yourself, release.
Expression,
you know?
Just like people, you know, how people have the diary that every night they write a little bit,
similar thing.
Yeah.
But it is that is your most raw self when you're writing down, when you're thinking something. But the minute that it goes from there through your hands to the
paper,
it's now physical. There's evidence now, and then that's when you're at your most raw and your most vulnerable and your most real. You know, that's why a lot of time you rub it out, you know, that ain't me. That's not really me. Then you try and write it, yeah, now that's me.
Yeah.
And only when you're satisfied that's really you, because you're going to be doing it to all your peers who are going to judge you.
Yeah.
So it has to be you 100%. The best bit of you is all that you want to portray.
I feel that it's important that you let them think sort of things out as well, though, because, you know, once they're out, that's it. You can move on with the next, you know.
Like a form of therapy.
It's big time, you know, so... Even now, I don't take to the mic too much. I'd still write something down just to get out, summarize my week or my month or the time that I'm going through right now.
Mm. So Jay, why don't you pull up a tune? Give us some context as to, you know, the kind of music
that we like.
Yeah,
you reckon?
Go on. You said you got it on...
you want to hear some
Yeah, first of all, what is the website if people want to go check it out? He's on your MySpace. Left to be your friend on MySpace.
I mean, it's not even MySpace no more, man.
It's MySpace.
Yeah. MySpace is like, see you later, MySpace.
It's like, you know, the AOL email addresses. They're kind of, it's a dead.
Well, wondering,
is there tunes on here that I can play? Yeah.
I'm wondering how long will Facebook survive? Do you reckon that's going to be in 50 years' time? See if you can make a prediction for the future. Is that going to be like?
Albany.
What in how long will Facebook? I think there'll always be something like Facebook where we can.
Yeah, or just say Facebook itself, the actual Facebook.com. How long would that last? Is that going to be around?
The service they're providing will last. They bought Instagram.
Yeah. The other way around. Yeah.
The service that they're providing will last. However, will it be called Facebook or something else? I don't know, but that concept will still be around the idea of sharing.
Oh yeah, once immediately. It's here, oh yeah, without that, that's going to stay around. That's definitely going to stay around. But whether the popping, so I'm thinking about like, say, I don't know, what's come and gone? What has been really big?
Wait, Jamie. Actually, yeah, you're going to have to stop that.
So I'm saying you've got to sort out the
one. No, because you have to do it through this, bruv. You can't touch that.
You didn't tell me.
It's cool, it's cool. It's still recording here, though. But yeah, if you can bring it up on that, you play it through there and then.
That's cool.
You didn't unplug anything else, did you?
No.
Good. Not a rewind of last week.
I'm gonna bring it up right now.
Right. So, what was your name? What were your names?
AC Mains.
Yeah, AC Mains.
Yeah.
AC Mains.
And under what record label?
AC Mains.
Yeah. We be spilling out the lines. Yeah, we loaded with the rhymes. This is make sure it ain't too loud. Life in my life's well split, no gimmicks, no lies.
Bane and Double RG. Metro.
Speak into the mic, let them hear the name of this song.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah? Okay.
Well spent, produced by AC Mains.
Did you like the lyrics?
No, these ain't mine, but these are by someone that I actually know who's up and coming at a young age and that, so. They're doing their thing.
Hip hop vibe, you
know, G. Amazing, isn't it?
That's a good tune, actually. Yeah. Something of, it's nice hip-hop, you know?
Well, the thing is, they're 16.
Yeah, they're just starting out.
You know, and,
very impressive.
At 16 years of age, you know, obviously, they're doing their work at the same time, but on the other side, everything.
This is something that they put their passion to.
So, and the way they do it is in a sensible way.
Mm.
You know, a very sensible way, something that I can agree with.
Mm.
You know,
I think that's so important for success. in any field, if you're truly passionate about something, it will come out. It won't feel like work. It won't feel like a chore. It will just be.
Yeah, it'll be natural, innit? Something
you
that
can't force something. Like that. You can't just, you know. And yeah, wow.
Well, it's weird because just going back to what I said earlier, like that's my little brother, you know, on that track there, and it's weird because when I was growing up, me and my friends, you know, he wouldn't be allowed in the room.
He's
on the other side. He would be on the other side, wondering, always wondering, what do they do like in there? You know, what's all that noise and all that music? You know, where's it coming from?
Yeah.
You know, he would be wondering, and it's funny me seeing him grow up and seeing that. He's picked up some of the good values, you know, you know, he's now getting on with what I was getting on with at his age.
I'm proud to see him do so
well.
Yeah,
but he's learned a lot, definitely. Like, I've always said to him, don't waste your time.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just have something on the side, and with a passion, just use that to whatever you like to do. And if it's music, I cannot tell him, you know, don't waste your time, because I may have felt that I may have wasted my time, you know, or I could have been.
So what would you have done differently, or what advice would you tell yourself?
Personally, I would have said study computer programming from I was 12, from the age of 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I would have personally said to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned a lot of things in this life, and one of them is to, you can only walk your own path.
Yeah, that's
you know, right. Like if you try to go on someone else's path, it won't be the path for you. You know.
No. Everyone is unique.
Yeah.
You can't.
So, and I've learned the hard way like that. So I've tried to pass that on and say, look, just get something and go for it and walk your own path. You know.
Yeah, and I think it's trying to force something upon someone, and if it's not what they, if it's not their path, they're not going to live a happy, fulfilled life. I don't care about whatever financial rewards. Let's say computer science. You stick someone in front of the computer who can't stand programming and whatever, then it doesn't matter how much money they're going to make. They want to make music.
Yeah.
You'd rather live a life like that than be forced to do something that you just dislike for the sake of, you know, parents. And I think pushy parents, I mean, I think it's one thing wanting the best for your child, which everyone does, that agreed, but also allowing them to find themselves and fulfill their own passions and potentials, and just got steering them. So when I have children, I'd like to think that I would obviously try to provide the best, but at the same time, whatever they like, whatever endeavour, to encourage that, rather than, I like this and I would love to have seen my son become whatever I wish I could have become myself and never made it. So, you know, now I'm going to put all my energies in forcing him to play football, but he doesn't like football, he likes tennis. Say, you know, then do that. So important.
And what would you tell yourself in 10 years ago? It's a London Real question that I'm stealing from them, but
I think,
just given I did know you 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Would you tell yourself to do differently? What advice would you give? Is something that you thought about?
It's weird, but I can genuinely say that at this moment in time, there's not that much I would have changed, because I did sort of follow my passion.
Good answer, man.
Yeah. So I don't regret that. And of course, regret, rumination, looking back. I now have come to a point where I think that's just, it's pointless, isn't it?
Mm.
And the moment we realise that we only have now, and even the future is not here yet, that we have to be in the present moment. That's the only time it's real. The past, playing around with that, what could I have changed? Even though, and I don't think I probably would have done exactly the same thing, given the same circumstances. We couldn't have changed it. And it's pointless. But we always do.
Unless you know,
and you didn't know any better, so whatever mistakes I could have made, whatever mistakes I did make, with the benefit of hindsight, don't do it again. But at the time, I would have made exactly the same
decision. And that girl, you shouldn't have done that girl that time.
Those women, but no, just anything.
Those two.
So you could, you know, with the benefit. So I've now come to a point, and I think that is a big cause of unnecessary headache, suffering, to say, I wish I would have done that. Because we all do that. But the more we do it, the more we cause ourselves headache in the present moment. Like sitting there, regret. What good does it do? Stresses you out. Practically, there's nothing you can change. You cannot, you know, you could learn from it. Granted, you can't change it. But you go through that story.
But do you know how many people suffer from the inability to do that? And so many people, especially in the States now, where there's a massive culture of just handing out prescription drugs so easily, that this little, you know, a 14-year-old kid suffers from the, you know, he's too
hyper
at school, and so they give him something to calm him down.
That was exactly like me when I was young.
It's terrible that the way that they think that they're solving the problem like that, when in fact it is just basic knowledge that you're talking about, you know, a decent child upbringing, you know, where it's a balance, where you have the fun, you have the play, and the hard work and the discipline.
Yeah.
When you've got this, because a lot of times you can be given a lot of love, like, you know, like women love the mothers love their children, but, you know, when sometimes the children get out of hand and have no respect, so they love each other, but the kid has no respect. And if you don't introduce that form of discipline as part of their education, then they can live their life very unfulfilled. And contrary to what, you know, what you're saying, that the life that you've lived, where you're actually very happy at the moment with the life that you've had, and, you know, you've been fortunate enough to be smart enough and wise enough to at one point say, this is what I stop need to do. I need to stop doing this. Because I remember you used to be a lazy motherfucker. This guy, he would sleep like 3-4 in the afternoon, and he wouldn't wake up for nobody. Like, you could knock on his door, ring, you know, non-stop, have his alarm go off on and on, and he would just, like, you know, like, I remember that screw face, like, couldn't wake you up for nobody. And then, you know, you made some significant changes in your life, then you went to university, and then, granted, university was like a stone's throw away from you, wasn't it?
Around the corner.
Had to be around the corner,
all very convenient. Everything was, but look at, as you said, you know, looking back, 100 things you, but of course, we look back, I mean, it's simple, isn't it? Pick 7 numbers, last Saturday, I'll be a billionaire, a millionaire by now. Just, if I could turn back time, I'd just choose 7 different numbers in the lottery.
It's funny, sometimes I always think that, I was like, shit, if I got the lottery, I could have won it.
Exactly, if I knew those 7 numbers, I would have been a millionaire. That's it, you can't, I mean, anything like that. Yeah, but the mind being your worst enemy. When you look at, I go back to this, but I think it's so important, such an important point, that the same physical environment, but depending on what's going on up there, a man could be sad or a man could be happy. I've said this before. And so, and your old mind is your worst enemy at a certain time. You're lying there, it's comfortable, the bed is soft, the temperature is nice, you know, and everything is nice. The belly is full. There is no physical reason for you not to be content.
Yeah, as soon as you start,
thinking about stuff. And so the ability to realize that.
That's funny.
And control that. Control that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'd say that I'm content, and I wouldn't change anything, because
you've been in control of your life. That's what you're saying.
Being in control.
You've been aware and in control. So that
aware of the mind. I think it's so important to say, well, you know, and of course, being human, you're not invincible to any sort of things that will get on your nerves. So say an injustice occurs, we go outside and we see someone just blatantly just stab someone in the street, and it's going to annoy you. You're not going to be, you're human, right? You're going to say, what just happened there? You know, this. Or, for example, we were talking about the Woolwich killings.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's going to annoy you. All those things will. But and as far as you can control as much as possible, every time you catch yourself thinking negative thoughts about the past, and you can do that. I think you're much richer and happier than whatever material things. So now, having seen that, rather than, I'm not wearing a Rolex watch, now what would I prefer? A £10,000 Rolex watch or a healthy state of mind? And what is the measure of success? And for me, I go by my own standards. And I think we should, back to what you were saying about everyone has their own destiny, their own path. And, you know, so if you go by your own standards and not care about the opinion of others too much and how you are judged by certain things. And to me, that is the, you know, up there in the mind is the most important form of happiness.
All right, so say I'm a listener and I'm agreeing with what you're saying, that it is strength of the mind. You know, how do you strengthen the mind so that if you are one of those people that is always getting angry very easily, which often means you're getting stressed very often, and stress is fact, it is bad for you.
Yeah.
You know, it grows inside you like a virus, and you know, sometimes when you get heart attacks, like my friend Lorenzo developed a tumour
mm-hmm.
because of continued stress.
Mm-hmm.
Jason had a case of alopecia where stress related hair was falling out. I mean, it's stress is it's something that can physically affect you.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So the, if you're that kind of person that can change one of those stressful situations into a, you know, very quickly, like it's a minor situation,
it's
a very healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually a healthy thing. It's a healthy state of mind to be in.
Happens a lot within couples as well. I realise with my girl, something so small can turn into something huge, or it can just be squashed. And it's like, so either you drop it now, or it's like, it's mad shit's going to go down for no reason.
Yeah,
you know,
you gotta think way back to that point. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Is it worth talking about? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just gotta say, leave it, leave it,
yeah. Leave it, or he's gonna walk away or something. It's not gonna be,
because it's almost a ritual. That the fact that it's physical, it's sexual, and it's mental as well. But because you're so immersed into each other, that there's bound to be this conflict because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've always grown up to be by ourselves. Even if we're parents, at night we go up into our own rooms and we have that space. But when you're living with someone and you've got a girlfriend, it's intense. It's a lot of...
fucked.
That's why when friends go away on holiday, you know, there's arguments amongst friends that would never usually argue.
Yeah.
It's just that because we could be good friends, it doesn't... You know, we'll argue about who... About, you know, you slept too late.
You don't want the other one to get it wrong. Like, you know, when someone's so close to you, you don't want that person to get it wrong. So, and they don't want the same, so you feel frustrated for them, and that frustration comes over as an argument or a dispute or something like that.
Mm.
You know, you expect the close ones to get it right all the time, but that's not how we're all made, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing how something that you can think is so simple and so clear is that, why don't they get it? It's so goddamn simple, it's just like.
It's a kid.
But you can't disrespect them, so you have to say, I appreciate your opinion. It's a stupid one, but, you know, I respect it that you have that opinion.
Because like I was telling you as well, is that sometimes I think stress is just, it's almost like a craving for some people. They like, you know, especially I think women in some cases, they almost enjoy it or they want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Some sort of drama in their lives or something going on, you know what I mean? Then you feel...
Stress.
Yeah.
When you're stressed, you get a chemical reaction that's a negative one. When you smile, endorphins are released, you get a positive reaction. And that has an effect on the body. And if you're stressed out all the time, you're going to be fucked.
No,
and that's why they say surround yourself with positive people, because those are going to, they're going to influence you and make you more happy. If you surround yourself with negative people, you can only but absorb some of their negative energy. You know, someone that's stressed out all the time, it's like you're always trying to give them advice and it's stressing yourself out, because, you know, like you said, like,
trust me, you know, bruv, you know there's like some people that will call you and like just tell you long problems and it's like, you know what I mean? You just don't want to speak to them. Or like cases of like a few years ago, for example, when you're talking to like various girls and stuff, they'll just tell you their problems.
I don't mind if the problem is genuine and I can help.
No, but it's constant.
But if it's a problem that is, yeah, if it's because of the problem with that girl and she's just not smart enough to get it, or it's like problems that easily can be fixed and they're making a drama of it, then I don't have time for that. But if it's genuinely an issue, you know, he's treating me bad, or something, that's different. But if like, you know, you know the people. Everyone knows those people that react in that way. And
the smallest things can trigger unnecessary. And you think, I think the other thing is looking at the bigger picture. I always say, looking at the cosmos and of, you know, not in the precise detail.
Some weed man talk going on here, by the way.
The
whole cosmos. What is the cosmos?
The cosmos was the universe.
So it's the universe then, yeah?
The universe, the entirety of, or even the visible universe, you know, 13.7 billion light years. This, you know, and remember to our audience that a light year is a measure of distance, not time, just to be clear. You know, the distance that light travels in.
Oh shit, dropping some science, astrology, knowledge on your ass.
Yeah, I mean, that's not getting too technical. That's just you know, but hey, it's a 13.7 billion.
You had me at Cosmos then. Go on, my brother.
So we're gonna get a little bit more technical. 186,000 miles per second. 186,000 miles per second. Okay, so we can imagine
that's quite fucking fast.
Okay,
you know, when you stop with your calculator, right? 1,000 in 1 second, not an hour like us lot. We're usually by the hour.
Planes go
500 miles an hour.
600 miles an hour.
So let's multiply that by a minute, and then you can just do the
multiplication. By a long minute, my friend.
A
long minute, and how far would you have travelled? Alright, and then let's look at, say, well, it takes we're going to measure the distance from here to the sun. It's 8 minutes.
Light years?
Eight light minutes.
Eight minutes.
To reach from us. So you look at 13.7 billion light years. All that. How can you even comprehend that? And that is the size of our...
It doesn't make sense, does it?
It's just the enormity. And also, we're looking at the staggering statistics of, in each galaxy, you know, we're part of the Milky Way, and how many billions of stars, of which the sun is just one. And we are a very small...
We're a tiny
And do you know that we are flying through space at about...
Miles. Yeah, I mean, we are not only rotating about our own axis...
No, but we are flying through space. Right, we are a vessel flying through space.
And the sun is orbiting, you know, where it's...
I think it's 1,000-something miles.
I think it's like 500,000 or something like that.
I heard it recently, but it's...
We're talking about we're orbiting the sun, which itself is moving...
Yeah, so we're doing that kind of thing, like, you know, it's kind of that. It's not just simply doing that, but we're kind of doing that.
The sun itself is...
But this is the sun. Milky Way. This is the sun, exactly.
The Milky Way is... And that is one... And within the Milky Way, there are billions of billions, you know.
If you looked at our galaxy, everything's kind of doing that. And they say there are pockets within the galaxies where there's different... You know, universes that are kind of rotating like that, and it forms this massive kind of spatial tornado.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
You showed me that program. It's like, because of the traction of what you're talking about, for us, it happens in over millions of years, but as the build up of that energy and all that force.
Yeah, we take it back to Earth now, which often happens. So then I'm in a KFC and some guy says to me, who are you looking at, bro? You see the contrast now. So
I'm looking at the Colonel, my friend.
I'm looking at the Colonel and I'm looking at my
Zinner Burger. His famous recipe.
You know, and I'm like, but you can see now that when you start thinking, in my opinion, I don't know if this is true, but for me, thinking about the bigger picture, how small we are, how insignificant, even the greatest minds in history or the greatest achievers in the grand scheme of things, it makes you realise that the small, petty problems of everyday life is just...
Minuscule.
Exactly, yeah. But we don't say that people get locked. I mean, and that stressed me. I think, talking about evolution, and I think that was a necessary part, that alertness, right? If a man just didn't think about anything, just chilled out, then, you know, lions and tigers and shit, you know, you would get attacked, right? You've got to be... paranoid. I think that was useful at one stage, but you know, civilization, humanity, society is changing now. We are not in African savannah, you know, we are in modern cities. But that inability to switch off, that alertness, I think, is what causes stress. And I think that was a part of our evolution. But now we don't need that, and that manifests itself in different ways in the modern world. But I think that is very innate. I think that is in our nature. And to control that, so stress. I think people you know, suffer from stress, and that's in a way it's in their DNA.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. So it's not. But I think you can change that.
You're talking about happens to me a lot when you say look at the bigger picture. Sometimes happens to me where I'm like, fuck, this shit is gonna really piss me off if I let it get to me, and then I think, alright, cool, I'm gonna be on holiday in 3 weeks' time. That's one thing I done the other day. I was like, cool, let me not get vexed. I'm gonna be away soon on the beach, you know, like that. That's one thing, or I'm gonna see my family, or, you know, something like that. That always does it for
exactly. So the brain decides whether you're happy or not. Like you said, two people in exactly the same environment, one can be happy, one can be sad.
Yeah.
Same when you go to the gym. You go to the gym and you.
That's annoying.
If you don't have that goal and you're not motivated, your body's not going to build. You're not going to. But if you got that, I'm going to go on holiday, and I'm going to have my beach body, I've got like 4 weeks, because you've got that time frame and that goal, and you've got that realistic time frame, you get this extra power and this motivation. And I said that positive energy comes through in your body, and that extra chemicals that's being released actually helps. And it makes you motivated. Every day you want to get up, you want to go hit it, you know. Like, once you get that momentum going, boy, it's strong. It's a hard thing to stop.
Boy, damn shit. But I
something that you hate could actually turn into something that you love and you can't get enough of doing.
Time, similar to badminton for me, I hated it at first, and then now it's become a passion that's ridiculous.
It's the thing you do the most, isn't it?
Yeah, that and gym, honestly, is the thing. Mm-hmm. And a couple other things that you might know about already. It's going well, and I was going to say, I thought you were going to actually talk about positive energy in the gym. You know, when you go in the gym and you see people, like, you know, there's some people that are, like, very happy and joyful, and I wanted to say good morning and shit to you, and there's other people that are just, like, you know, not positive energy. But when I go in there, I'm immediately trying to smile and say good morning to people, and some people don't react to it well, and some people react to it
it's
well.
It's funny you should say that. In the game, it says, you walk into a room, you smile, and the game is on. You know, disco, whatever you want to church, go in, you smile, and the game is on.
Yeah,
people respond from a smile.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, a woman will be stretching on the mat or something, and then we'll just make eye contact, smile at her, and then she'll look at me, and then she'll, like, they'll, like, they don't know, like I say, it's just weird, they don't know how to respond sometimes, because I guess it's out of the norm.
One of my ex-girlfriends, she's a t-shirt that said, smile, it confuses people.
Clearly it does.
They don't know what to make of it, it's like.
And the thing is, I do it a lot these days, even when I'm driving. I look bad at that guy next to me and I just go, like that, literally. I don't look at that. Or sometimes I get a smile back. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, yeah, I got a smile
and
back.
And you can diffuse an intense situation with a smile. Just going back to your point where you said, oh, you know, that guy says, what the fuck are you looking at, mate? You must be smart enough to know, I can either do this, there's several ways that you can choose to handle that situation.
As soon as you go, oh, nothing, and like a little smile, then that's it. It will affect what he thinks next. But as soon as you
So you got a choice. What? So you can his anger energy level is like on a 10 out of 10. Because he's just started on you. And the reason why he started on you is because he's willing to back it up.
Yeah.
Right. So when you respond, there's several ways. It's like through sounds and words, I'm going to try and talk some sense into this guy. Mm-hmm. Or just do what I can just to avoid this long thing. Like you said, in the whole enormity of the universe, why should I spoil my night from one of these guys here?
Exactly, yeah, I don't want to ruin my nice shirt. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And well, I mean, we are evolved primates. So I think the other thing is forgiveness. Not weakness. Forgiveness is not weakness. You know, whether written in the holy books or just as common sense. For me, I like to take more common sense. But when I forgive someone For being unloyal.
Unloyal.
A member of my gang
who's
not loyal. when I forgive someone, I think it saves me, right? So, for example, Jay over here is not loyal. And I'm upset. That causes me pain. And then I'm trying to avoid suffering here. So just my anger. Do you understand? So forgive. Not, and again, I have to emphasize, not because I'm following the teachings of
Christ.
Yeah, you know, the Bible or any religious text, simply as a practical way of releasing that pain, that inner suffering, that inner torture, because this man said something and I'm upset with him, but I forgive him and just think, you know, you're only human, you're just like me, and you only want your happiness just like me. You've come about it the wrong way, just because your form of happiness is to prove how tough you are, and say to me when I'm waiting in KFC, who are you looking at, bruv? Do I know you? And to make yourself feel good. In a way, you're a very warped, confused individual. But I'm not going to go, if I go home and then say, that bastard, I wish I would have shown him a thing or two. And then that's causing me, you see, now the situation's done.
Yeah.
And that's causing me unhappiness by not forgiving.
But isn't that fun when you go home and you just think, all the things that I
could have done, but
it's, you got to also think about, like, if you've got good things going for you,
don't need to.
Why do you want to screw it up for, you know?
Exactly. You don't want to go on that level. You don't want to go on
it's
that
like
level.
There's many a times, you know, like, every one of us could have lost it at a situation very easy, but you know that you've got something that you're working towards, and like something that if you just put one foot in it, that's it.
Yeah,
everything that you accomplished is gone.
But that's part of that discipline that I was talking about. And it seems that you got that from a young age, you know, understood discipline. And that, as opposed to getting a GCSE or something, will serve you a lot better in life
Yeah.
And I think that's what's important about getting learnt in school, is the discipline, respect, hard work. And not through the, because people are not enjoying the books that they're studying and stuff, but there really needs to be an education system that prepares you, really prepares you for the real world. Yeah. Like when I finished GCSE and I have to choose A levels, and there's like, I don't know what to choose for A levels. I don't want to choose between, I have to choose between technology and art. So why would I have to choose between technology and art, or geography and history was one of the two. I didn't get it. And then when I went to university, I'm like, fuck, what do I do now? It's either economics, business, so French, shit. History. It's like, what do you do? If you had like a life lesson where you talk about all the real issues of the world, yeah, you might think, it's not whether I want to study geography or history, it's like, I want to go and help starving people in Africa. Yeah. How do I set up my life to do that? Or yeah. How
I want to get to that goal or that yeah. line. Or
if I, once you understand what the real issues of the world are, how do I go and live in another country and contribute something meaningful? Because if you ask a lot of people ultimately what they want to achieve in life, that tends to be one of them, where they say, I want to help, genuinely help out, contribute and give back. And that's, they tend to figure that out the latter part of their lives. But if you provided that understanding in the earlier stage, when you're at that critical moment when you have to decide the next career path, because I mean, you were recently there, right?
Mm.
We've all been there, where you have to decide, what do I want to do with my life now? And when you're at that young age, people make you think that whatever you decide kind of defines you for the rest of your life. Or it should be like, you know,
broad, you should be able to
do what you want. Where do you want to help in the world? It's not what do you want to do, it's like how do you want to help? Yeah. Where do you want to go and help make a better place? And if people approach it like that, you would have a lot more meaning in your life, because people, a lot of the time, they just don't know what to do and they end up choosing something just because they have to.
But
I got the best grades in this, so I guess I better pursue this, or you know, and it's the wrong reason. It was the wrong reason for me as well.
The pressure on grades, on school to just, I think that is one criticism actually about schools now and heads and government pressure, league tables. That's been a very, I suppose, controversial point, league tables and how schools are measured against other schools and
top ones.
Grades, the emphasis of you must get this, you must get that. But what about the well-being? What about exactly what you're talking about? Now, what is the point of all this if I'm just going to be miserable? So we're emphasizing too much on getting grades and putting pressure on
it. Yeah, but what? How is this going to, when it turns out for me, how is it going to make me feel as a human being
exactly.
as well?
That part of the curriculum, but you hear your teachers just barking at you, do your homework, and very little time spent on being a human being.
I mean, I studied on a computer games programming course, and obviously I was very interested in computers, IT, but that was kind of out of my league, because the amount of stuff that I'd have to give up to obtain a good grade in computer science, you know, is enormous,
And the competition is ridiculously hard, isn't it? The
competition is ridiculously hard. However, I did have inspiration from a friend of mine called Charlie, who now works for Microsoft.
Mm.
And, you know, he had some knowledge of like computer stuff, let's just say, but
programming stuff,
hacking, computer hacking and
same.
That. But he learned just like everyone else, you know. But he put in the time, he stayed until 9, you know, and he would help out everyone as well. And he was a good guy, so for him, that came normal.
Big shout out to Charlie,
however, you know, he was able to do backflips before, but. You know?
Back to Charlie, but now
obviously he ain't able to do that because he's put on a bit of weight from just sitting at the computer
and that, so
he could always shift that weight with that 60 grand a year anyway, or 90 grand a year.
But the thing is, you make time to do what you like doing.
Yeah.
When he went into that job, it must have been like that. He committed everything to it.
Everything else
will suffer. You know. That's what I'm saying. If you don't have the balance in your life, if you're not, you've got to do your hard work, but there needs to be the fun and play and active, like our badminton, you know, your football, you have to go out and do that to get that balance.
Mm.
It's crucial to a healthy human being. So what's he doing now?
He took the gap year out or whatever to go and work with Microsoft, but he came back for his third year. He's finished this year. So
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure he's going straight back into Microsoft. He's just an excellent programmer, and the fact that he put in the work, you know, is where he is right now.
But doesn't it inspire you when you meet people like that?
Of course. However,
not only great at what they do.
Yeah.
And they motivate you just by the passion that they have, but also they want to help other people as well. And I think that's...
Do you know what?
That's an amazing characteristic from anyone.
He helped me out on more than one or two occasions submitting work. Like, something is easier submitting work, but to me, I deem that as very valuable for him to take his time out to help me in dying minutes of handing him work and that. But so obviously I was good at graphics class, so I offered to do his work for graphics class, you know, just to repay his help, yeah, return the favour as well, so, you know.
They say that in life there's givers, takers and matchers. So a giver...
just gives.
Yeah, we all know those guys, you know, always will stop what he's doing to help out someone. And give that's just the way that their mentality is.
Yeah.
You get the takers, they're always trying to find a way to take.
My girl's a giver, man.
And then you get the matchers that, you know, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you.
Yeah.
And vice versa, you know, they believe, oh, if you've done this for me, okay, I'll do that for you. But if you want something from me, you know, vice versa. How would you categorize yourself?
3/4 a giver, 1/4 meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm. What the matcher? You do this for me, I'll do that for you.
Yeah. I'm the giver because I won't expect to be given back. But you know, if it's given to me at the right time,
mm-hmm.
I won't refuse. You know, if the help is given to me, I won't be like, no, don't help me move this furniture. It's all right, you know. Mm-hmm. They're offering to help out because they too.
Because you know that you would do it for them as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that's. But I guess because I'm a bit of a giver myself, and because I always want to help people out. When people don't want to help me out, I kind of get frustrated. It's like, well, I would do that for you, but then you need to remember that not everyone is like you.
But that's why I said like 1/4, kind of meet in the middle sort of thing, you know, because I will get like that. At times, I will be like, wait, hold on. I helped you 4 times. You only need to help me once, you know?
Mm.
And yeah, that's when you would bring that card out, you know?
I was saying there are givers, takers, and matchers. Well, what would you classify yourself as?
Definitely giver, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think, there was interesting. There was a talk about that. I don't know if you probably know about this. They say that people who are more giving, which are more successful, you wouldn't expect it, but are more successful in business.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, I think I read the same article.
Yeah, and it's contrary to what one would expect, you know, takers.
Yeah.
Shrewd businessmen, but actually it's the givers that...
It's because of the relationships as well that you build, exactly. And the rapport that you develop through that time in the long run.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I attribute a lot of my success in my 7-year career at PK, where it's the relationships and the trust that I built up has done me much better than all the sly people that have left the company, you know, long gone.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's not like, you know, I suppose as men, it's like, is it growing up and all this macho talk and, you know, but now we're at a stage of maturity where we can confidently say, yeah, give it, that's fine. It's not a form of weakness just to be a decent human being and just want to...
It's not a form of losing out.
Being a decent, you know, treat others as you would like to be treated, and simple as that. And how that actually turned out to be a positive thing, a sensible way of doing business and being more successful.
I think you get extra pressure, I think, being born in an area where there's a lot of what we call rude boys.
Without a doubt.
Like we mentioned, one of the first podcasts that you were on, you know, you're from Hackney, bit of a ghetto area. Me and Jay Halsden from when we were young, and me Queen's Park as well. You Halsden as well, Nadi.
Yep.
Now, Brent. So this whole idea about
Brent-based,
trust and friendship and stuff. When you're exposed to an environment like that, where it's very violent, and it's very dangerous, and it's quite scary.
Hostile.
Because, you know, especially me, I grew up in a very, you know, loving family. Well, in bed early, didn't watch any of the adult programs. You know, very... The best childhood you could have asked for, basically. And then I went to live, you know, with that Trinidadian family. And I lived in Halsden, and I got exposed to, like, bullying. You know, not on a big scale, but enough to, like, have it shock me to the core that I was always nervous and always looking... A skinny white boy in Halsden was vulnerable to, you know, left, right and centre. And, you know, like, having been mugged a couple of times, you know, I used to be, like, terribly skinny and easy target. And it makes it very difficult to be forgiving and to think, oh, there's so many... You know, there's bigger problems in the world. I shouldn't really worry about being mugged, but it's very degrading as a human being for someone just to come and steal your property, and you feel so helpless that you can't do anything about it. And that starts a very bad kind of effect in the brain.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's why there's so many therapeutical solutions, whether it be through whatever medium you choose, but there is that issue. And I think that going back to being born in a ghetto upbringing, it's very difficult to be very philosophical in life and say, oh yeah, don't worry about it, there's bigger problems in the world, let me turn the other cheek and let me be relaxed and calm.
Because you'll be more involved in the here and now, exactly, you know,
a product of your environment.
Yeah, you don't see that, exactly, you're more involved in the here and now. It's a good way to put it, I like that. Yeah, it's true, it's like, that's all your world, that's all you know.
Mm-hmm. And if everyone's saying it's so good to have sick trainers or to smoke weed when you're very young or to go and have finger that girl and lips that girl, grab her boob, it's a very, very sordid kind of upbringing.
Well, I mean, it's a funny thing because little things like little experience such as those ones can play through to your adult life. Like, I noticed the point where I started buying Nike Air Max 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Air Max 90s. Now, I love those trainers. I still do. I don't buy them anymore, but I do love those trainers. Mm-hmm. And I remember being a child in the playground and that, and some of the olders in the older year will have like a Lessie or Nike or, you know, you know, Reebok, whatever. I didn't have that, you know. I mean, I remember asking my mum, can you buy me a pair of Knicks, please?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know what the heck they were. You know, no, Nike. That's what I said, Nike. She ended up buying me a pair of Knicks.
Fatal error to the parent. They don't know. Oh, same thing. I'm going to get killed in school, literally, man. You don't understand.
And how much that means to you as a child.
I mean,
it means the world as a child.
It means the world. But the thing is, obviously you was an in guy. If you had the Nike trainers, you know, and I remember one particular guy, he literally, Alessi, Nike, Reebok, you know, that he was suited and booted. I had nothing.
Yep.
But I remember the first time I got my first pair of red Nikes and I wore them in.
Uh-huh.
And I went up to the guy and I was like, Nike, you know, to get my own back on that sort of thing. But it played through to, like, obviously teenage, adult years where I'd be buying, I'd buy, all my trainers would be a Nike pair of trainers, guaranteed.
So let's kind of like analyze. Because we've all did that. We were all victim to that.
Yeah.
And mainly because our parents wouldn't do it. Or it would be rare.
Yeah.
So when it came, like... It makes no sense. How can a shoe be loved just as much as a toy? I remember when I got my first Air Bubble. What? That was the best day of my life.
Like me as well.
I got so much love from my peers in school.
Yeah. Well,
it's ridiculous.
He made an important point. The in-group. The cool group. Identity.
And that evolutionary need to belong and to be accepted.
It's important,
you know,
especially when you're
we want to be. That's all it is. That's why when you buy them later on in your adult life, it reminds you that thing you're being accepted. If I wear it, people will accept me. And that's always seen as a token of acceptance, and you're fighting for acceptance, and that symbolizes it so much that you buying that shoe is the acceptance.
Yeah, it's like maybe at the time I missed out, so I've been trying to not miss out all these years by buying those Nike pair of trainers, you know.
Yeah.
However, that's not how I, you know, how I like to perceive myself, you know, like Nike pair of trainers, you know.
I used to get cussed down so much. Well, not even cussed down, I would cuss myself out so much because of the shitty garments that I wore. So that's why I'm now, like, my Prada shoes, you know, my Armani watch, my Gucci, this. I don't mind so much now, but because I'm in a position financially where I can do that, I'm doing it, but... It was very important to me at the time, because
it
made me feel that people are accepting me. When before, I felt that I was starting here. I was already below everyone because of the clothes that I was wearing. And the minute I buy the clothes, I feel like I'm up here already. Fresh haircut puts me up here as well. I used to get shit haircuts. So when I got fresh arms, fresh hair, you know, fresh to death, you go out feeling on top of the world, don't it?
So you just remind me of a time when I remember Jay. Like, I've been cutting hair for like 11 years now. Mm. Yeah, do my own hair on a regular basis, you know. It saved me money, you know. And I've looked good, and there's been times when I haven't looked so good because of my own haircut. But I remember one time Jay was brave enough to ask me for a haircut.
Never again one.
And like, I don't know what happened to him that week, you know, how he got along with society that week, but I know for sure.
Is that what started wearing in hats? Is that the first day he started wearing hats ever since then?
You know, I think he still may have a picture of it somewhere when he's got that haircut with him. He's just got the fringe and everything's low.
It's all one level. Everything's like all two.
I want to see that picture, man.
And then we tried to like make the fringe short enough, but it just wasn't working out.
You know, I think I didn't anticipate that his hair was like longer than my hair at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I asked him like, what, level 3? And I thought level 3 would be enough, but sadly it wasn't for him that week. So
it's almost like I done do the other day, remember?
Yeah, he nearly fucked up my hair the other day. I got level 1 all over. I just said, alright, I took off the level 1, so it was like a 0.2. I said, just clean up the bottom bit. So he goes all the way up there, and I'm like, so the whole thing had to be a 0.2.
I had patched his head, I didn't realise. He said to me, oh, go and do the bottom bit. I got cool. So I was just about to do his whole head.
And he goes to me, don't worry, it looks alright. So that's how you know not to trust his advice.
Yeah.
But I cut you off, Gordon. What were you saying earlier?
I was going to say that then continues into adulthood as well. The desire for basically material things, what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
The nice, so it started out with a nice, everyone, I was like, everyone, the nice trainers.
It's all about the shoes.
The trainers. You know,
until now,
and
trainers.
Your teenagers,
it's a big thing.
Designer clothes, and women still do the handbag, you know, not even, you know.
Crazy.
So you got that, and then where, so those Nike Airs, 90, I mean, if that was the only, you see, then you got up, as your friends have grown up, and everyone can afford Nike Air Max. Have the Gooch maybe, and then you got to have a car, and everyone's got a car now, we can all drive, and then maybe a nice, where does it end? You see, that's the point. And I think after a while you realise that those Nikes that I used to love so much, sleepless nights over them, they are now in the bin, gone years ago.
Yeah.
What? So there's nothing permanent, idea of impermanent, you know, nothing lasts forever. Where are they now? You know, we keep, what it's called, you know, the hedonic treadmill, just to maintain the same level of happiness. We keep going for more and more and more and more. And I think we're freeing ourselves, but it says something that all, you know, our society promotes that. You know, even from a young age, at the age of 8, 9, 10,
and
like,
is that we
in
know
the school
that,
play, started in the school playground.
That's very obvious in the current phone market, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, I try to not. Well,
adhere.
What's a better word? Adhere to
the nature of the smartphone, let's say.
Yeah, well,
you
know,
say.
I tried for as
many
long
years,
as possible. Not
10 years he was going for.
Yeah, 10
until
years.
Like good
yeah.
last year, and he just said.
And,
how can you deny technology like the fucking Samsung
well, the thing
S,
is,
Galaxy
S4? Technology is dangerous.
Jesus,
it's
this
thing.
Is a beautiful piece of technology. 13 megapixels.
It's a dangerous thing, but all I thought to myself, do you know what? I don't need the greatest phone right now, you know. All I need to do is be up to date with the current technology, and that's it. And as long as I can do enough, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, because we're gonna.
But what
just
is?
Keep
but that's what I'm saying. What is enough to you is not enough to me.
This is enough, like.
Yeah, but enough to you is not necessarily enough to me. I need to be watching movies, Netflix, all my apps, Facebook, emails for work. I need to write like a 100 word email on this. I can't be writing like, you know, little button. This is a nice keyboard for me now to write my 100 word email.
True,
so
true.
It depends what is necessary for you. You know, what is needed
what
for you.
Whether you prefer to carry around a laptop or a phone, you know. For me personally, I'd rather just like.
But there's some old Nokias that are beautiful, man. You know, there's the old thin 8210s. Those tiny ones. Those are. I would rock that today, you know, like for the weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, the 8210, the small one.
Small
isn't it?
Ones.
Yeah.
I've used to change the backlight. What? That was a sick one. But anyway, following this theme, I want to talk about quickly about Sully Breaks. And Jay's heard him a good three times now, but
I'm gonna go outside to this.
Go for it. So Sully Breaks, he is a spoken word artist. And if you don't know what the spoken word is, it's like doing a bit of rap, but you do it to music, like hip hop kind of music.
Play the right one.
Yes, I will do.
Too long ago, we had a spoken word artist by the name of Sully Breaks. Came down, dropped a live session, and a lot of you were excited about it. I was excited this morning when I opened up the package, had no idea what it was. Opened it up, put it in the player, pressed play, and it totally blew me away. It's this brand new piece from his brand new The Dorm Room EP. I'm gonna have to let spoken word do what it does best and let it speak for itself. Brand new Sully Breaks.
This is decent, what he's saying.
Right now,
whoa,
there is a kid finishing parents' evening in a heated discussion with his mother, saying, why does he have to study subjects he will never ever use in his life? And she will look at him blank-eyed, stifle a sigh, think for a second, and then lie. She'll say something along the lines of, you know, to get a good job, you need a good degree. And these subjects will help you get a good degree. We never had this opportunity when I was younger. And he will reply, but you were young a long time ago, weren't you, Mum? And she won't respond, although what he implies makes perfect sense, that society's needs would have changed since she was 16. But she will ignore him, grip his hand more sternly, then drag him to the car. But what she doesn't know is that she didn't ignore him just to shut him up. She didn't lie because they were just returning from parents' evening and an argument in the hallway would look bad on her resume. She won't lie because she just spent the last 1 hour convincing a stern-faced teacher that she would ensure that her child studies more at home. No, she would lie simply because she does not know any better herself. Although her whole adult life, she has never used or applied Pythagoras' theorem, prophetic fallacy, and still does not know the value of X. She will rely on society to tell her that her child, who has one of the sharpest minds in the school, is hyperactive, unfocused, easily distracted, and wayward. Students, how many equations, subjects, and dates did you memorize just before an exam never to use again? How many A grades did you get, which were never asked for when you applied for a job? How many times have you remembered something 5 minutes just after the teacher said stop writing, only to receive your results 1 month later to realise that you were only 1 mark short of the top grade? Does that mean remembering 5 minutes earlier would have made you more qualified for a particular job? Well, on an application form, it would have. We all have different abilities, thought processes, experiences, and genes. So why is a class full of individuals tested by the same means? So does that mean Sherelle thinks she's dumb because she couldn't do a couple of sums? And if this issue is not addressed properly, it then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Then every school has the audacity to have a policy on equality. The irony. Exams are society's methods of telling you what you're worth. But you can't let society tell you what you are, because it's the same society that tells you that abortion is wrong, but then looks down on teenage parents. The same society that sells products to promote natural hair, looks, and smooth complexion, with the model on the box half photoshopped and has fake lashes and hair extensions, with pastors that preach charity but own private jets, imams that preach against greed but all fat, parents that say they want educated kids but constantly marvel at how rich Richard Branson is, governments that preach peace but endorse wars, that say they believe so
Sully
much
Breaks. So this video specifically is called I Will Not Let an Exam Result Decide My Fate. So this spoken word is, Jake, you showed me a couple of videos. It's been around for how many years now?
Good amount, 5-6 years. Man.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it goes back more than 30-40 years. The idea of kind of like free, you know, putting some lyrics behind some music. But he was a guest on the London Real podcast.